From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. This is the Hervoy Morit Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
All right, hour one. Welcome, everybody. Some quick news. Of course, the Nord Stream event is the biggest news, and I think looking back in history, this is going to be one of those major turning points. We've got Al-Mayadeen News reporting how U.S. military aircraft circled Nord Stream incident site in September. U.S. military helicopters habitually and on numerous occasions circled for hours over the site of the Nord Stream pipeline's incident near Bornholm Island earlier in September, according to Flight Radar 24 data. A U.S. Navy Sikorsky MH-60R Seahawk helicopter spent hours loitering over the location of the damaged natural gas pipelines in the Baltic Sea for several days in a row, September 1st, 2nd, and 3rd in particular. There's just so much evidence pointing to the usual suspects. And John Helmer, based in Moscow, he's got a website or blog called Dances with Bears. Kind of obscure. He should be more well known, but super high quality content and analysis he puts out, veteran journalist. He's saying that the military operation, which fired munitions to blow holes in the pipelines, was executed by the Polish Navy and Special Forces. It was aided by the Danish and Swedish military, planned and coordinated with U.S. intelligence and technical support, and approved by the Polish Prime Minister, Mateusz Morawiecki. So again, there's another scenario. General Spalding, who I follow, who's also interesting, he was alluding, I think his view was that this was a Russian false flag that would create more distrust towards Western institutions, which also has some logic to it. So never underestimate the ruthlessness of any state actor. You know, my view is that all governments carry out state terror and false flag operations, including the Russians, including the Americans, the Israelis, the Turkish, the Germans, the British, the French. So it's really hard to figure out who's done it this time. But Russia has come out today and said that that leaks spewing gas into the Baltic Sea from pipelines to Germany appeared to be the result of state-sponsored terrorism. So they're using that terminology now. They didn't quite say who yet. They say this looks like an act of terrorism, possibly on a state level. It's very difficult to imagine that such an act of terrorism could have happened without the involvement of a state of some kind, said Peskov. So, yeah, that's where we're at with the pipelines now. Which state or states was it? Was it the Polish? Was it the Americans? Was it NATO? Was it the Russians? The Ukrainians? Who knows? Maybe we'll never know. Also, Europe is bracing for mobile network blackouts. Once unthinkable, mobile phones could go dark around Europe this winter if power cuts or energy rationing knocks out parts of the mobile networks across the region. That's probably a good thing. You know, I think everyone could use chill out, you know, from smartphones. Although we'll be talking about smartphones and privacy this first hour with my guest. And so, but the problem is so many things, well, a number of things people depend on for, you know, with their smartphones. What would a cashless society look like with a smart, you know, with mobile network blackouts? Although I think the powers that be have been working on some sort of offline payment, digital payment systems. I wonder how that would work. And what else do we got going on? We have a hospital in the UK still spending £138,000, employing two people to stand at the door and hand out face masks and hand sanitizer, according to a FOIA Freedom of Information request, or FOI, as they do it in Britain. So they're paying what, 70,000 pounds to a person to hand out face masks and hand sanitizer. What a waste of money. But you know, that's what COVID-1984 is all about. It's all about the money. And let me remind you that if you've missed your favorite TNT radio show or interview, you can always listen back, even from the very beginning, when you want, whenever you want. All the episodes are on tntradio.live. And we're also on all the major podcast platforms, Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, all of that good stuff. There's no reason to miss out on anything on TNT Radio.
Stream the news wherever you are.
I listen on Alexa.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
It's my pleasure to chat finally for the first time with Ramiro Romani, a core member of the Freedom Cell Network, with Derek Bros, who's somewhere here in Mexico with me. And Ramiro is also the co-producer of The Greater Reset and founder of Take Back Our Tech, which you can find at takebackourtech.org, and the Above Agency, which is you can go to abovephone.com. Welcome, Ramiro.
Hey, Evora. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. And you know, I just want to say, Ramiro, it's hard to find good websites, resources, and experts on privacy. And I've long bookmarked takebackourtech.org. It's one of my favorites, with a lot of actionable intelligence. And you're also working on abovephone.com. Are those currently your main projects?
Yeah, so I kind of fell into this from a past life, where I used to be a software engineer and work on web and mobile applications. And so I did a lot of that stuff for 5 years, and I worked for big and small companies. And then I started to get involved into in activism. I started working with the Freedom Cell Network, and I realized how important it is to bring privacy and technology to activism, because they're the people who need it most. And so quickly I pivoted, right? That was my way of going counter economic. I left my high paying job and was just like, okay, let's just take a chance, and started my own company, which is Above Phone and Above Agency. And we've been doing web digital media. And then on the side, I do activism and education as part of Take Back Our Tech. So it's been an awesome, amazing journey. And been doing it for around 2 years now, still here, so feels good.
And you started you've got a new podcast. The first episode was posted. I listened to it. You want to tell us about that as well?
Yeah, so that's the Take Back Our Tech podcast. And I just felt myself being called and interested in geopolitics, because there's so much important news that's going on, as you know. And I wanted to step outside the box of just digital technology. So we've been doing the Take Back Our Tech podcast. I released the first episode. I'm going to be trying to release an episode weekly. And that's going to cover new privacy, new types of technology, not just focused on digital technology, but its interaction with geopolitics, kind of the clash between governments and activists, and also free energy and building and health technologies that people don't know about, but are starting to hit the main stage. Because yeah, there's a lot of people in our community that are working on stuff like that. So I just want to share as much of it as I can get. So you can watch that on takebackourtech.org.
Yeah, I watched it on Rumble. It's on Odyssey and other platforms. No more YouTube for me, if I can avoid it. I call it Pentagon Tube. But you know, one of the biggest threats I see to privacy is just trying to keep, kind of as you alluded to regarding the activists, but trying to keep everything I do private from government, corporations, and criminals. And this means often fiddling with all sorts of systems, trying, you know, whether using Linux or using Windows with a lot of settings turned off, to VPN, to alternative search engines and email, to dumb phones, and what you do at Above Phone with the de-Googled phones. Maybe if you could, you know, would you say this should be one of our primary focuses? What do you feel are some of the biggest threats to our privacy?
Yeah, so today we're definitely going to talk about above phone and de-Googled phones in general, but I'd love to just have a conversation around the biggest threats to our mobile privacy. And just when you think about it, you know, what's the only object that stays on your person at all times? Well, it's a sad observation, but for most people, it's going to be their phones. You know, maybe we'll switch away from that. But unfortunately for most people, these phones aren't serving us. They're serving other organizations, and they're sending data back from all their different sensors, radios, cameras, microphones. And that's what I want to talk about today. I want to shed some light on the situation because it can seem overwhelming at times. I want to make sure that people understand how it works, and also say that it's not hopeless. It's definitely not hopeless, and there's things that we can do to protect ourselves. So I've got some stuff prepared for that, and we'll go through the three different layers of mobile tracking. I did this really long article. I'm sure you've checked it out, but I'll share with the audience, and then I'll also talk about solutions directly after each layer.
Yeah, let me just add that it's about over a decade ago. You know, I was looking for solutions, ready-made solutions. Like I bought two phones early on with the Silent Circles black phone that was founded by former U.S. Navy SEAL and Phil Zimmerman, the PGP guy. And those were duds. They stopped like updating the first iteration, and the hardware was just really slow. And then Librem, who makes the Linux phones? Librem, those number one. I heard their laptops are pretty good, but their phones are not really ready yet. And then I listened to Rob Braxman as well, who's great. And I come to the conclusion that our best bet is a de-Googled phone, which is also what you're doing. Would you sort of agree with that?
Yeah, so I totally agree. So there's a number of different phones on the market. Some of what you were mentioning were Linux phones, which are really early on in their life cycle, and they haven't really reached maturity that people need. So we're going to talk about de-Googled phones, and the reason why they're Googled in the first place is because they're using the same open source foundation as Google's operating system, Android. And at first that sounds like weird, but it's actually a good thing because it means you get a phone that works out of the box but doesn't have Google on it at all. And the main concern here is that there's two companies that are responsible for 99.7 of the operating systems in the world that are running on phones in the world. So that's 6.5 billion mobile phone users. So if these organizations, right, referring to Google and Apple, if they acted maliciously, then they can see, they're listening to, they can locate and track the majority of human interaction in the world. So yes, if there's anything we can do to peel back their control, and it's not just them too, there's other players in the ecosystem, like app developers, advertisers, cellular networks, and the law enforcement and government offices that actually receive this information. If there's reasonable actions we can take to limit our exposure to them, then we should take it. And yeah, de-Googled phones are absolutely something that have been working. My company, we utilize the best de-Googled operating systems in the market. We evaluate them. We also find the best apps. And then what we do for our customers is we package it to, so it comes out of the box, ready to use. And we also provide a lot of free education, not just for our customers, but just releasing out to the public and finding new solutions that really you didn't think were possible on one of these phones. So, you know, there's stuff like making phone calls without SIM cards, and some other really cool stuff that we can drop into today.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, take us on this journey. By the way, how do you make phone calls without SIM cards? I mean, I assume you can do through the messenger.
It's voice over internet, right? Which is, it's a pretty standard thing that's been around for a while. But now what we ended up finding was, because I'm a big champion of XMPP, which is another messaging protocol, is we have a good partnership with this company that bridges XMPP, which is internet-based It's free, it's decentralized, so anyone can run this themselves, and then they can use the service to bridge out to the phone network. And there's absolutely no information you have to provide. And they accept Bitcoin, and it's like $3 a month, right? So like, we'll talk about today how that fits into the grander strategy and why you might want to do that over actually getting a SIM card in your phone.
And is it global? Like, you could do it in any country or jurisdiction?
It does work internationally. Yeah. It's, and I think, you know, support, it depends on the country, but it does work internationally, inbound and outbound now. And yeah, I think more countries are being added, but the phone numbers you can get, they're only from the US and from Canada.
All right. We're going to have to jump to our first break again. We're talking to Ramiro Romani of takebackourtech.org and abovephone.com. We'll be right back on TNT.
You should hear what Shannon Joy is talking about.
The Iranian people's fight for liberty in that country.
It is 43 years of oppression and tyranny, dictatorship, murder, thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of innocent lives taken just basically because they wanted their basic rights. Over and over in last 43 years, people of Iran have tried to set themselves free, even though a lot of them are my generation, meaning they never felt or experienced the freedom, but they are looking for it. Mm. But the biggest problem is every time they try to do that, the Western government, Western media goes absolutely dark on them. Guess what? They can't do it on their own. You know why? I'm going to take a moment here to possibly piss off some people, because they don't have our Second Amendment. In last 4 days, the order shoot to kill has been placed in Iran. They are fighting bare hand while bullets flying at them. Mm. So that is what this revolution, these repeated try and attempt is about. Give me freedom or give me death. That's what they've been fighting for.
The Shannon Joy Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
On the day that he was inaugurated, the Washington Post had an article on impeaching him.
I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear.
Donald J. Trump is now president of the United States.
They had an absolute legitimate meltdown.
If you try to change a system that big, the system fights back.
The story behind the biggest election takeover in history.
We're only now being able to finally confirm exactly how this worked.
Mark Zuckerberg and his wife are donating more money to local governments ahead of the election. $100 million on top of a $300 million gift.
The most money any individual has ever spent to win a presidential campaign in the history of our country.
I actually became infuriated that someone had allowed Zuckerberg to tip the scale.
The election was bought way before Election Day.
They stole it fair and square. They changed the voting rules in the middle of the game.
A nation divided.
This was the greatest billionaire assault on election integrity we've ever seen.
A billionaire-funded plot against the president.
Do you believe that they used the COVID emergency as an excuse to pull this partisan voter turnout operation?
Am I allowed to give you a one-word answer? Yes.
Rigged.
It was a rigged election. People have to find out what happened.
At SalemNow.com.
The climate change lunatics in government and at the WEF will make meat, cheese, milk, and chocolate heavily taxed luxury items to save the planet. Just like private jets, the rich will indulge in whatever they want, while the poor are left with nothing. Remind me how the French Revolution ended again, when the poor had nothing? Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
We're with Ramiro Romani of TakeBackOurTech.org and AbovePhone.com. If you're looking for a ready-made, de-Googled phone out of the box, you can purchase one from AbovePhone.com. And so, again, you know, to take us on this tour, I think you mentioned there were three layers, you know, if someone wants to have a smartphone. And it's not just about, you know, you get this de-Googled smartphone, but then you have other things you have to worry about, like choosing a VPN, different browsers, Brave or Firefox search engines. I like Swiss cows. dropping things like Dropbox, who has had, or I don't know if they still have, Condoleezza Rice on their board of directors. So Neil Khan, I don't think you want to be using Dropbox. So where do we go from here?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's not just one single thing. It's this whole interconnected sphere. And yeah, I guess we can start by clearing up some misconceptions, because I think when people go into this, they have this really idealistic vision of what they're getting into when they get the phone. So I think the first thing is absolute privacy or secrecy doesn't exist, right? The world is just too interconnected for that. Especially with the internet, if you're using the internet, there is always going to be something that you rely on to connect to. Your data is going to pass through that. So even though today we're going to cover solutions that are huge improvements to your privacy, you should think about it as getting 80% of the way there, right? The Pareto principle. And no matter what you do, there's still going to be ways for organizations that are determined and who have the right resources to break into your systems. And that's always going to be the case. I mean, this is the same if you are those government agents, if you are some state level actor or some corporations. These people are getting hacked all the time. Okay. So that's the first thing to understand. The other thing I feel, and I think this is a contrary opinion, because I think we get in the really victim attitude of just believing that the situation is hopeless. My belief is that the tech giants and these governments behind them aren't as all-knowing and powerful as we think. And just remember that they're trying to stay on top of the lives of 8 billion people. So how can one organization, even if it's the most elite in the world, or multiple organizations, how can they stay on top of that? They can't. They can't do it. And that's why they have these, what I like to call, abusive software systems. They have these abusive software systems, and I'm talking about Google and Apple and all the social medias. And these have been created because these people are lazy, the companies are lazy, and they need your consent. They need your participation in order to have the tracking. So they create these convenient pathways for all people to consent to their data collection. And they take the forms of things that are readily available, like the two major phones, Android or iPhone. They take the form of these operating systems. They take the form of the apps that we love and are marketed to us, and social networks. And these, it's very likely, and you know, we've seen due to things from the Prism leaks, it's likely that these all feed into a larger system that can neatly analyze your digital life. So the big takeaway here is, if you choose not to join these paths, as you were correctly mentioning earlier, you choose to opt out, then they must work that much harder to track you. And then we'll get completion with this. Is my vision is when there's enough of us that take the steps to opt out of these paths, then these abusive software systems and organizations are going to struggle to keep tabs on all of us. And even if they manage, they're going to find lives lived simply and fairly. I don't know about you, but I'm a pretty regular guy. I'm not a criminal. I believe that the vast majority of people are too. So they could try and crack our XMPP messages, and maybe they'll get hands on someone's phones, but all they're going to find is someone trading some eggs for some honey. So they can have fun with that. So to summarize, Take Back Our Tech is not just about making better technological choices. It's about taking responsibility for how we use technologies to know how they work, and then to use those technologies in the pursuit of freedom, happiness, and service to our fellow man. So all the tools I'm going to show you today, I hope you use them to build counter-economic institutions and maintain secure community-based relationships with your people that, you know, and the truth is, it's no one's business but your own. And with that, we can get into it.
Yeah, just one more, just a thought. As you said, you've got, let's say, you know, the average person who just dives right into big tech. You know, they've got their Instagram. They don't think twice. And I recently had a conversation with someone in Europe who works in tech, who's a bit, let's say, normie-ish and naive. They still have good faith in, you know, the government and institutions. And I was talking about these things that I'm bringing up with you. And I said, no, no, we should start using all this alternative stuff, de-Googled, you know, VPN, all this stuff. And then they asked the question, well, then you will look like someone who's off grid. Like, you'll stand out if you don't have a Facebook account, like to the powers that be. And then he was saying that, you know, won't that raise their eyebrows and want to go after you even more because you're like off grid? What's sort of your response to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that not being on the systems will attract attention, but you know, it's attention that is almost meaningless. It's almost, you can ask that question, right? If a tree falls in the forest and no one hears it, without, you can't take action on something you don't know about. And again, these people are very lazy. And after doing enough research on different privacy projects, I actually feel as if state institutions are clearly behind the biggest privacy projects. And that just kind of goes into it, is that they would rather want you on their system. So I think that is... I don't think it's as big of a deal as people make it out to be. I think that you can exist outside of their reach with decentralized open software that anyone can run themselves. They really have to work much harder to get information about you.
Yeah, and I would say there's no other alternative. I mean, that's still better. Using all these alternative systems is still better than being on the plantation on Facebook and Google and all of that. We got to jump to a quick news break. We'll be right back.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Authorities in Florida have warned that fatalities will be in the hundreds as Hurricane Ian continues to barrel its way across the state, leaving a trail of complete destruction in its wake. Prime Minister Liz Truss was given examples of the potential hardship facing millions as she embarked on a round of BBC local news interviews, in which she said she would not alter course from plans to massively cut taxes and increase borrowing by billions.
Did you know there are many ways you can listen to TNT Radio? Why not stream us direct from our website on your desktop, tablet, or mobile device? Or download our app from the App Store? We even stream live on YouTube, Rumble, and Odyssey. We've got you covered on TNT Radio.
You mentioned that you don't think I'm a criminal or anything like that. I've had to do criminal background checks, so I came out clean. But today, you know, more and more, in the eyes of the U.S. government and perhaps even the EU government, more and more people like myself are being deemed as thought criminals, enemies of the state, dissidents, domestic terrorists, simply because we don't believe everything the government says. And so please, you know, what are some of these magic tools that you're talking about?
Totally. I mean, it seems like they're just changing the laws to be whatever they want. And that it becomes scary when you see that the surveillance state ties directly into that. So, you know, the first layer of this that is occurring is in the operating system of your phone, right? And the operating system of your phone, it doesn't work alone. It needs the help of other servers. In the case of the two main, you know, your phone's connecting to Google, and it's connected. If you have an iPhone, it's connecting to Apple every 5 minutes on average. And if you want to see this information for yourself, this very comprehensive article I wrote almost exactly a year ago now, I still think it's one of the most collective articles on this topic. You can go on takebackourtech.org. The article is called "Who Can We Call On?" And so for the operating system level, this study called Mobile Handset Privacy from the Trinity College in Dublin, Ireland, talked about how our phones are constantly pinging back to these servers and also getting a feel for how they're tracking our phones. And it worked by intercepting the requests coming from these phones, pretending as if they were Google and Apple servers, and then decrypting the traffic to the best of their abilities. And they did different things with the phones, the iPhones and the Pixel phones, like turning it on, inserting a SIM card and changing settings and to see what it would do. So the main thing to take away from that is that your phone has a bunch of unique identifiers. Right. It's got and these can identify your phone and they can also identify you, your identity, because Google and Apple already have your credit card information most of the time, or they have your Gmail, right? And most people use real information. It's enough to tell your real identity. So they found that on every single connection, when you're turning on your phone, it's sending out your unique device identifier and your hardware serial number to Google. And similarly, when you're inserting a SIM card, it's sending out your mobile equipment identity, IMEI, which will uniquely identify your device across the cell network, right? You can actually report your IMEI as stolen to ban that phone from the network. So that's how that works. So it's that level of specificity. And then also your SIM serial number. And so there's a lot of unique identifiers that constantly are getting sent off, and a lot of things you wouldn't expect either, such as Apple sending out the MAC addresses, which are how your internal network, how devices refer to each other, sending out your MAC addresses of other computers at your house off to Apple along with the geolocation when you turn your location on. So stuff like that is happening. And, you know, that's kind of scary because that it's much harder to control. You know, even if you don't have an Apple device, you invite a friend over and they connect to your Wi-Fi. Well, and that's going to happen. So what I think is that they're trying to build their own map of the world and all the devices on it, because they don't have Google Maps extensive abilities to search and put out cars like that. And so like all this stuff I'm talking about, this is all just basic usage of the phone. They weren't really trying to do much. They were just turning it on and messing with settings. This is, wasn't even extensive use of the apps or things like Face ID, which we'll talk about today as Apple's, you know, unlocking technology. And,
I just had a question about when you say your friend, let's say your friend's got an Apple phone and it comes to your house and they connect to your Wi-Fi router. I got like two routers. So I've got one that's it's a flashed VPN Wi-Fi modem. And so, for example, if my friend comes and he just logs into my Wi-Fi, which it's to my modem that's running on a VPN, does that mean that I would fool Apple or no?
Well, I think it depends on what devices are visible on that network. You know, you could have a guest network and that would make it so that the other devices on the network aren't public. But I mean, if they were able to see, because, you know, devices can usually ping to see what other devices and what their MAC addresses are. If it is able to see the devices, then it would just send that information to Apple through your VPN, which would be kind of cool. I was going to say that it unless you have a firewall on Apple servers that it uses, which constantly change, there's a ton of different servers, it's unlikely to block it outright. But I mean, I think you have the right idea to just practice network security and maybe just make a guest network for those people, so that way there's nothing for them to send off.
Mm-hmm. And just one more point about the OS sending off data constantly to Google and Apple. I mean, would that be one reason then that the battery seems to drain so often? And then on a de-Googled phone, does the battery drain less?
Yeah, I mean, you're spot on. There is so much stuff running in the background, and you know, this study I'm referencing, we tried to replicate a lot of what this college did. The researcher's name is Douglas Leeds. And so we've been working on our own way, and we've compared Graphene OS phones with standard Android phones and looked at the network requests that have come out. And there's so much more. I mean, I want to say hundreds and hundreds of requests within the span of minutes that get sent out. So no doubt it is draining the battery. It's also generating a lot of EMF, because we've ran our own EMF studies, and we've found, you know, it's just directly related, the amount of connectivity your phone makes. So it's all related, and that's another benefit of using a de-Googled phone. Less shit running in the background, and your phone will last longer. Mm-hmm. So I think that brings us to a good point, which is to talk about the operating system solution, right? Which is So the first thing to realize is we can't work inside the walled gardens of Google and Apple. They have made their operating systems proprietary, right? Which means the code's not public. We have little idea of what it's capable of, and we have to observe it externally, right? And in the case of what these people did and what we did, we connected our phone to a laptop, and the laptop was able to monitor and log every packet that was sent through it. And these people went a step further and spoofed the certificate of Google and Apple and allowing them to see what was being sent. So that's one step even further, as a professional security researcher would do. So if you use open source operating systems, there's already this incentive there not to spy on your users. You know, only make the requests that are actually specifically necessary for it to function. And there are valid requests that you need. You know, you'll do time checks, you'll do updates, you'll do GPS locations. So these are other operating systems have less telemetry that just gets sent out in general. And some operating systems actually specify which connections you should see. And we've been able to confirm that with Graphene OS, which is the recommended operating system to recommend for anyone who's buying a Google phone from us or even installing it themselves. And so all of these Google operating systems, they have the foundation of Android, the open source foundation, but then they add in their own security improvements. They have the Google bits taken out. They'll do things to support more devices better, to more, support more cellular service plans. And so that's one of the huge benefits, is just having this privacy by default.
Just on the options, you mentioned Graphene, and I haven't listened to him for a while. Rob Braxman recommends Lineage OS. I don't know if he's changed his recommendation, but beyond Graphene, is there any other decent option? And what's your opinion on Lineage?
Sure. Yeah, I've seen that Lineage OS makes they do connect to Google in different ways that aren't clear to the user. There is a recent issue on their GitHub. If you check that out. I don't remember what exactly the issue was, but we don't like Lineage OS. There are projects that have forked from Lineage OS, which means, you know, they took a copy of it and they started making their own improvements. Divest OS being one of them, and we like Divest OS because it does have consistent privacy, and it also has a malware scanner and also works with a whole bunch of phones, and the developers is just a really good group. So check that project out, divestos.org. There's also Calyx OS, which we offer all three of these on the Above phone. Calyx OS is probably, its saving grace was that it had MicroG, which was a Google compatibility layer. But now it's just kind of been dwarfed by Graphene OS's implementation of Google services, which work better and can actually be sandboxed into a container on the phone.
All right.
So you can get any of these operating systems through abovephone.com, or if you just search up those respective websites and you get a compatible phone, you can install it yourself. And, you know, if you find yourself technically capable, I encourage you to install it yourself. I'm definitely not trying to sell everyone on the Above phone, but if you don't have time to do it yourself technically, it's a good option.
All right. What other layers of security are we looking at?
Yeah. So, I mean, next I could talk about the application environment, right? So, I mean, applications work in the same manner. They're going to use servers to get and fetch data for whatever you use, right? So these are usually managed by the developers, but I know from having built mobile applications, the first thing you do after you publish is like, oh, man, this thing doesn't make money. And so immediately these analytics companies come out of the woodwork and offer to pay you for bundling their analytics software development kits with your app, which so these are hidden layers within most applications we use today. I refer to them as trackers. There are more bits of proprietary code included with most apps today. And there was another study done that was referenced in my article that just shows that there's an average of 5 different trackers for an app on Android. That's up to 5 separate companies. And you can see them because they're connecting to different websites that aren't related to the app. So the study was called Apps, Trackers, Privacy, and Regulators. And one thing it did that was really cool was not only did it find that 14.4% of these apps were capturing unique device identifiers, the same ones the operating systems were collecting, but is these... And these analytics and advertising companies, they're also collecting, you know, what you're searching in the apps, how you're using the apps, what you're clicking on, et cetera. But the biggest discovery was when they looked at what companies owned these third-party domains, and then they looked at their parent companies. So do you want to guess at what company owned the most trackers?
Google or Meta?
Yeah, you got it. Alphabet, which is Google's parent company. So these guys are so sly that they not only have access to information from the operating system, but they also own the analytics company. So they really get a full picture of everything that you're doing on the phone. There's just one company. And you know, there's other companies included in the list like Facebook, Verizon, and Amazon, but Google's up there. The study I'm referring to is mostly on the Google side of things, but Apple is also in there, and in its own ecosystem, they're third on the list. So 17% of applications are sending data to Apple through their trackers.
Well, I think this is one of the reasons that, I mean, it's been like maybe 2 years ago that I just stopped using WhatsApp and Instagram on my phone because I noticed. Well, I read that apps like WhatsApp and Instagram monitor, if you have them installed, will monitor everything you do on your phone, your browsing and other stuff outside of the app. And then I noticed when I would log into Facebook, which I don't really use much, but nonetheless, whatever I was browsing on my smartphone, related ads would appear on my Facebook. And when I uninstalled like Instagram and WhatsApp, those ads stopped appearing in Facebook, which was incredible. So, you know, another reason to take care of your privacy. We got to jump to our last break. Again, the websites are takebackourtech.org and abovephone.com. We'll be right back.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
Well, we've been talking a lot about the United States weather, and rightfully so. We pinpointed over a week ago what was going to happen with this storm, and of course, it is happening. And of course, the climate activists all wake up when something actually happens. They have no idea something is coming until it actually shows up. Last night, I was on the set of Sean Hannity's show, actually waiting to come on, and he put on a video of Amy Klobuchar, who's a U.S. senator, saying, well, this is why we passed the bill for climate change. You know, I got to tell you something. Either people like that don't know what actually is going on, or they do, and they're going to lie about it, okay? But it did get me aggravated because of the fact that it is complete fabrication that a storm like this blew up as it coming to the coast, especially since you had me outlining it 10 days before. How does someone that knows so little about CO2 know so much about the weather? That's the mystery question. This is WeatherBell.com meteorologist Joe Bastardi for TNT Radio, asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
The Caesar Rodney Election Research Institute, CRERI, investigated Zuckerberg's favored nonprofits, the Center for Technology and Civic Life, CTCL, and the Center for Election Innovation and Research, CEIR, and found nearly 99% of CTCL grants of $1 million or more in the battleground states of Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Texas, and Virginia went to cities and counties which Biden was certified as winning. In some places, the funds gave Democrat-leaning areas a more than 10-to-1 advantage in election resources. A grant program for 5 Wisconsin cities allowed these Democrat strongholds to spend roughly $47 per voter, compared to $4 to $7 per voter in traditionally Republican areas of the state, the Amistad Project, an election watchdog, revealed. Analysis by other groups like Influence Watch and the Foundation for Government Accountability found similar discrepancies.
We don't rock. We talk. Today's news talk, TNT Radio.
On our final stretch with Ramiro Romani of TakeBackOurTech.org and AbovePhone.com. If you need a de-Googled phone, and again, Take Back Our Tech's got a lot of resources you can go and use, which you can use then to customize your own privacy in your life. And, you know, Take Back Our Tech is one of my favorite sites, along with a few others like RestorePrivacy.com and Rob Braxton, but he only does videos, and you've got articles which you can much more easily refer to. And so, all right, let's say you get a de-Googled phone, you're choosing good apps. You know, what are other key things to be thinking about?
Yeah, I think since we're on our last little stretch here, I can talk about some of the awesome things and, you know, what really makes this different. So on the Above phone, all of the apps, with the exception of one, are free and open source apps, which means the source code is transparent. You can go look and see what exactly the app does, what servers it's connecting to. And so if you have an Android phone, you can even get this app store. It's called F-Droid. And from it, you've got all of these free and open source apps, and there's a bunch of tools that you can use. You can find alternative maps that work just as good as Google Maps, to be honest. You can find podcasting apps, password management, crypto wallets, note-taking, and a ton of other awesome things. And then there's also an app on F-Droid called Aurora Store, which will let you anonymously download apps from the Google Play Store. So that's a way to have your cake and eat it too, at least to remove Google from that aspect of the picture. And this store allows you to kind of audit how many trackers you have with each app. So, you know, you can kind of see, TikTok has 9 trackers, probably not going to use that. And that'll help guide your decisions that way.
Yeah, I've got F-Droid on my phone as well. Yeah, interesting stuff. Maybe to get a quick thought on geopolitics, you know, you were recently talking about Pakistan and Imran Khan, and how basically Silicon Valley, in my view, with the U.S. government and Pakistani government, shut down social media such as YouTube to prevent Imran Khan from rallying people. And I've experienced this living in Kazakhstan, where the Kazakh government would shut down the internet or throttle it or shut down big tech. And they even tried to force all people in Kazakhstan to install on their a browser certificate. So imagine they wanted us to install their own Kazakh government malware browser certificate, which if we had done that, it would allow the Kazakh government to see everything that we're doing on our browser. So if we log into our bank, they would get our username and password, which was insane. And you know, Mozilla said, we're not going to approve that. All the browsers, you know, said we're not going to approve that. But any further thoughts in like this sort of in environment? So you know, you've got your de-Google phone, and some of the things that you're talking about, F-Droid, and then you want to look into like choosing a VPN. I had to go through 3 VPNs in Kazakhstan, because the first one I used, they eventually blocked it. Then the second, and then the third worked. But then my private email, I know you like ProtonMail, I use StartMail. That's banned in Russia and Kazakhstan by the ISPs. So I could not access StartMail. I had to use a VPN. I had to go through 3 VPNs to be able to access my emails. So yeah, any further thoughts here?
Amazing. Yeah, well, I guess just to clarify, I definitely don't like Proton Mail. I've written exposés on Proton Mail. I could go into that, but yeah, the with Pakistan, it's a unique situation because they shut down their own internet. They shut down their own internet just to stop the ex prime minister's speech from going even more viral than it was, and Pakistan banned VPNs and back in 2008. So it's something that they've been working on for a while. I know India now has done the same thing, and they're in that transition period where there's a list of approved VPNs that you can use. But my suggestion to those people that are dealing with this is, you will have to use encrypted communications, and you know they will ban as many websites as they can. So you might have to, you'll have to keep trying, right? It's just going to be this cat and mouse game. I would look into IA2P, which is another peer-to-peer encrypted network, much like Tor, but not funded by the U.S. government. So it's the actual layer that I recommend. And as far as email, I recommend, I think there is going to be a resurgence of smaller companies running email for people. And that's what we do with Above Phone. We run Above Privacy Suite, which is a collection of five utilities that are super important. So right now we give you XMPP, which I wish I got to talk about more, but that'll give you encrypted chat, voice and video, email, a VPN, video conferencing, and also a search engine. And we're about to release a calendar. So you can get all those for $100 a year. And what I'm going to be doing is encouraging other companies to run email for people. It really needs to turn like these. It's much like growing food. You have a local farmer, right? You're shortening your supply chain. So our software services, we also have to shorten that supply chain and do that. But I mean, I will say this too. There's always going to be ways around censorship. Case in point, the Great Firewall of China, which is, you know, the most extensive censorship operation. And there's still ways to get around that. And there will be.
Yeah. Sorry about saying that you like Proton Mail. I was reading something today, and I don't know if it was something from your site or somewhere else. So I guess I was mistaken, because I'm suspicious of Proton Mail as well. I've read about them. There was this COVID researcher that had their email account terminated by Proton Mail, and their origins are sort of suspicious. And Yasha Levin, who wrote the book, I think Surveillance Valley, points out, you know, how Signal was financed by the U.S. government.
Right.
Tor, I've had on TNT Paul, the cypherpunk Paul Rosenberg, who's very suspicious of Tor. So would you agree that a lot of these things are very suspect, like Signal, Tor, and Proton Mail?
Totally. Yeah, I mean, you know, we had Edward Snowden come out and give away all these leaks, and then his solution was, oh, here's two softwares, use these, and kind of not really mentioning anything else. And of course, they were Tor and Signal, one created by the Navy, and the other one that had gotten more than $2 million from the U.S. Department of Media. So yeah, that's incredibly suspect. And the things that Signal does is not conducive to privacy. It collects phone numbers. The way their key exchange works, right? You're supposed to trade encryption keys. Well, Signal knows who is talking to who and when they're talking to each other. So there's not been any proof of being able to crack the encryption, but there's enough red flags there to make me avoid it completely. And then new news has actually came about. I'm working on this article about Tor because there's this new company called Team Saimuru that claims that they observe 93% of the internet. Motherboard from Vice did the big piece on this, but they kind of glossed over the part where the CEO of this company was a Tor board of directors. I was on the Tor board of directors just until last month when he resigned. So that's an investigation I'm currently digging into. And so they were selling NetFlow data from the internet to the U.S. military, to several branches, the Navy, the Army. And so it's kind of curious when these privacy projects work hand in hand and get money from the government, you really have to wonder who they're actually working for. And that's why I believe in open protocols, not companies. That's why I believe in XMPP. It's software that anyone can run themselves. Same with email. I believe encrypted email is kind of a farce. You can use an IMAP service and you can simply encrypt your email yourself. And that's what software is all about, self-empowerment. So I would avoid, yeah.
We got about a minute left. I think you're going to be at the Greater Reset. Are you going to be in Mexico? Maybe I'll take a trip out there and meet you in person. So a minute left. Tell us all the best about all your projects and how we can find you.
Awesome. Yeah. So if you want to hear from me and stay in touch, go to takebackertech.org. If you want to check out a phone, go to abovephone.com. If you want to connect with people in person that share your values, go to freedomcells.org, which is a decentralized mutual aid network, 30,000 people and growing, and we're taking responsibility for the state of the world. And definitely, Havore, I want to see you at the Greater Reset next year. So that's January 18th to the 22nd. Check out thegreaterreset.org. It's a solutions-based conference happening over 5 days where we have awesome speakers speaking about solutions across tech, health, food, economics, and much more. And yeah, I would love to see you there and to love see any of the audience
there too. We'll have a tequila. We're out of time. Thank you, Ramiro. Takebackourtech.org, abovephone.com. Stick around. We'll be right back.